The Board of Education meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mrs. Decker, please call the roll.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here.
Mrs. Andreas?
Here.
Mrs. Howard?
Here.
Mr. Black?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. Is there anyone present who would like to present to the board tonight from the public? Any? Okay. Thank you very much. Presentations, reports, and initiatives update.
We're going to begin with Karen, who will give us an update on the foreign language planning group. And as you can see, she is surrounded by supporters and workers of that group. And thank you all for coming this evening and showing your support as well as being available to answer questions.
Well, and I do want to start just kind of introducing these are some of the members who were on our planning grant committees. Kate McCuskey, who we've got Priscilla, first grade teacher at Churchill, Priscilla Williams, Linnea Urbanowitz, second grade teacher at Churchill, Karen Dimmitt, foreign language Spanish and French, at Hadley, Alice Taylor, Spanish, at Hadley, and then one of our parents, Billy Rice, Andrew, at Churchill, correct?
Yes.
And she joined us when we started doing site visits and then hung in there and the committee continued to meet and process a lot of that information. So we'll go ahead and get started with this. You may recall that we were awarded the planning grant probably late spring, early summer, and then the group started to come together back in August. And at that time, we had an opportunity to articulate with some of the high school members as well, and we kind of shared kind of that what's currently happening at Hadley and what happens at the high school. And at that point, then, we started to really, we kind of talked about that big vision, but then also began to do some research. And what came out of the research was kind of those two primary methods of providing the foreign language instruction. Reminder, the difference between dual language and immersion. Dual language is when you have enough students of the second language. So you would have, for example, enough Spanish speakers speaking students to be part of that dual language. So you have half English, half Spanish. Where you might do immersion would be if it was Chinese, for example. You wouldn't have enough native Chinese speakers. They'd all be English speakers, so you would immerse them in the Chinese language. But they're learning both to read, write, those kinds of things in English and in Chinese or in Spanish. So that's kind of the dual language slash immersion. But the other method of providing foreign language instruction is what is called foreign language at the elementary school. So we studied the research around both types of those programs and then also just brain research as it relates to how kids acquire a second language and benefits of time, things like that. Some of you may recall this slide. I guess that's really hard to see some of that. But this showed kind of that learning curve for students as they participate in different types of programs. The number three, that third line, is currently what we offer with our bilingual program at Churchill. It's kind of that early exit bilingual, and they're learning English as they're learning to read in Spanish and that. At the very, very top is dual language. And the interesting thing about this particular research is it really followed kids throughout their school career into high school. Often, a lot of times, the research just shows kind of a couple of years. So you can see in the beginning, it looks like some kids start out a little bit stronger in learning English, but the maintenance part, the strongest is when it is dual language, that they truly become biliterate and bilingual in two languages. And the biliteracy piece is the ability to read and write in that target language. So with in studying the research and that, we kind of came up with a little bit of a rationale for the desire to have that dual language. You can kind of see that global, the research findings around that, and Hispanics will be that majority minority. 2023 is not that far off. But what, some of the things we learned is that with the dual language program, it does satisfy the requirements of that what we're mandated to provide in the area of bilingual education. The research has shown, and the districts we talked to, that it does a good job of closing that achievement gap for ELL. And we'd like to really strengthen our data for our current bilingual students in that. As I mentioned earlier, we have kind of that early exit program, and so what happens is the kids learn to read in their first language, read and write, which in this case Spanish, but then as soon as they transition to English, we're no longer continuing to instruct them in Spanish, so that often goes away. So they end up not being biliterate because we've removed that Spanish support. So this kind of would maintain that. And what we're finding is our kids, we had targeted, we wanted them kind of out by at the end of second grade, and we've had to kind of go third and fourth, and then their English hasn't been as strong as we would have liked to have seen it as well. And then it would give other students that opportunity to learn a different language, obviously not as many because it would be targeted, and we'll talk more about that later. So with the dual language program, there were really a number of benefits to students in those five main areas. And there was probably nothing that you wouldn't expect. And it's all kind of outlined in that summary that I gave you, the cognitive and academic benefits. And those are the most noteworthy. Obviously, attitude and the cultural piece, particularly with cultural competence, we saw that. But if we want true biliteracy, rather than just being bilingual, we really felt that within this dual language program, we would suggest that we want to do kind of a 50-50 model where kids spend half of the time learning the target language, Spanish, and then half the time learning English. And as we saw those cognitive and academic benefits, we saw that, you know, different schools have different models, how much instruction is received in Spanish and how much is in English. And we tended to prefer that 50-50 model where they're kind of learning both at the same point in time. With the FLES program, that foreign language, and you can think of FLES as kind of, for lack of a better word, almost traditional foreign language instruction. They receive so many minutes a week, and it could be pull out. In other words, they would go to a foreign language room, given our space. Obviously, that would be an issue. The teacher would push into the room for so many minutes a day. And what we found both with brain research and just the research around FLES programs is there are both cognitive and academic benefits. When you read those through in the summary, though, you'll notice that those same benefits would apply to dual language as well. They'd be learning the language at an earlier age, you know, when the brain is more readily able to learn it. So again, the two primary areas, obviously the cognitive and academic benefits, and I'll highlight one of those benefits kind of later on as well. So as part of the research, too, we also started to identify some of the different districts that offer foreign language instruction. And this highlights the ones we actually saw. There are more. What we did find is not as many districts offer FLES. It is more expensive. There are a few. Dual language was probably the more popular. Out of all of those, I noted, too, that Barrington just started Chinese, so that was a new program. Schaumburg has offered Japanese for a number of years. We saw their Spanish program when we went and observed it. But the nice thing about the variety that we saw is that some of them were kind of in their early stages. They know that this was really kind of their second year of doing it, where others have been up and running for 8-plus years. So they've got some good data to support those in that. I would say the greatest benefit of the site visits was not only the ability to observe, but to really talk with the different staff. I would say every place we went, they were so gracious and willing to take time. I think they even almost had subs for some of them so that they could sit and talk with us and explain the program. So we really were able to kind of learn about their journey, and they had some great recommendations for us. So following kind of the site visits. We debriefed, tried to kind of figure out, you know, what we saw at each one and what were some of those commonalities in that. We kind of took all of that information along with the research and put together this kind of tiered recommendation. And our first recommendation would be to start with the Spanish dual language program at Churchill, targeting next year as a planning year, and then implementing in 13-14 using a 50-50 model, and beginning with kindergarten and then adding a grade level of year. So you'd still have your bilingual program to meet the needs of the kids who are currently in the program, and you would phase that out over time, implementing then the dual language as it moves forward. So then the Spanish Dual Language Steering Committee would be formed next year. They would design all aspects of the program. Well, when that is in its first year of implementation, it would be a planning year for FLEX. And then to implement FLEX in 14-15. We haven't landed on it would be this language, that language, whether it's a different school. And this is where I would say we had a lot of conversation. If you want foreign language for all, it has to be FLEX, because you couldn't, you know, to try to do an entire building of dual language, not that it's not impossible, but that would look very different. So FLEX, that more traditional, is a way to give exposure to all of your kids to learn a foreign language. And on a future slide, I show the recommendations on minutes and that. But we also didn't want to say we only ever offer Spanish dual language immersion just at Churchill. And if it is successful, to try to extend it and expand it to some of the other schools. And what other districts have done, as you can see, like Schaumburg has Japanese and Spanish, Barrington has Chinese and Spanish, so they've tried to do some of those other languages as well. These are just some of the what the steering committee would do next year in kind of what we all kind of really need to have in place prior to rolling out that dual language program. I won't go through all of them. That entrance criteria, though, was pretty important because you will have some Spanish-speaking students who are really English-dominant, so they would fall in the English side as opposed to being Spanish-speaking because it's not strong enough. Another big one that we heard from a lot of districts is how students are selected for the program, kind of what those rules are. It might have been Barrington, and Eric, you were at Barrington, where I think they did have a sibling rule, and then they had like one whole class of all siblings, so nobody else could get in from any of the other buildings and that. So then they kind of were starting to rethink. They have like a point system. And so if you're a sibling, you get some extra points, but it doesn't ensure you're in. And so those are just some of the things that we'll have to kind of weigh. I know the one, Elk Grove, had to start videotaping their selection process because people assumed it was suspect when their child did get in. So they do videotape it, and they show it to show that it was just a very random, however they're doing it. So those will kind of be all of the things that we need to be sure that we articulate, define, develop. Probably another one is the social emotional needs of the students, because they do stay together for a number of years. And so sometimes they become like a family, so you kind of have some of those family dynamics going on in the school system or in the class, as opposed to just a typical classroom dynamic that might occur. So that would really be the work of that steering committee next year. And then here was kind of those specifics around FLEX. One of the questions that has come out, as you've heard me talk about before, we've got our literacy block and our math block, so how would even foreign language fit in there? And for me, the logical place would be within a literacy block, because you're working on reading, writing, listening, speaking. And Julie and I, when we were in Arlington Heights, she had said that it's probably that makes sense to kind of pull it out of that block of time. So it'll be one of those things that we would explore. But the research did show that it didn't hurt kids to be taking time out to be developing a foreign language. And then you can see what the experts recommended, that at least 75 minutes per week, kind of over three sessions. Others would say, you know, it's great to do it daily for so many minutes, but there's also kind of that the dollar amount that goes in it. And in the board report, I did kind of do, even though we won't kind of be planning it next year, my best guesstimate that to meet that minimum requirement, and I in my head was thinking 75 minutes primary grades and then move to about 90 minutes to add some time at the intermediate grade, you would need about 7 foreign language teachers to provide less at all 4 schools. And we have to work out what that would look like for kids who are in dual language, the one district. John, we saw that. Oak Park. When we saw Park, their dual language kids also got foreign language instruction, which was a little odd, but it was about teacher plan time. So, you know, whether that's the best way to go, I'm not sure. But so that's kind of, you can see that there's more dollars associated with class, but if your goal is foreign language for all, that's really what it takes. And I put kind of best to begin by first grade. Kindergarten would be ideal, but if it's a half-day kindergarten program, we barely have enough time to do what we need to do now. But if our kindergarten happened to be there full day, then you'd want to start with kindergarten. And I projected it with kindergarten to be there full day. So just to kind of be thinking about that. These are all the different members of the planning grant. Before I kind of open it up to questions and see if anybody wants to add anything, tonight's presentation is really kind of step one in this process. You know, we've given you kind of a summary of what we found and where we'd like to go. We'll be coming back to you next year to give you all the detail around what that dual language program will look like. So that's kind of the second step in the process. That third step would then be to bring the, you know, develop what that FLEX program would look, put very specific dollars to that, and come back to you that following year to be able to say, this is what it would look like, these are the languages we would be offering, and this is what it's going to cost us and what it would cost us to maintain it. And then obviously we'd be bringing the data around the dual language program back. And so there's going to be additional opportunities to probably weigh in on things, but at least this is where what we're thinking right now. So, do you guys want to add anything? No, we're here to help answer questions.
You were talking about some space constraints. So where would the plus, where would you picture them being taught?
They'd be foreign language on a cart. So, I mean, you know, the teacher has their thing. But that's what they usually, you know, if you have the luxury of having a room, that's great. But a lot of times, it's, you know, they go to the classroom and then they provide it. When we saw Chinese in Arlington, I can't remember it, that the teacher went into the classroom and completed the lesson. And, you know, she used a lot of smartboard interactive things, and the groups always had that in there. But we didn't see a lot of, and when we saw the Spanish one in Oak Park, it's not like there's a lot of textbooks in that at that elementary level, so it's not like they're hauling.
And thank you for answering my question. That was pretty helpful to time out of. I agree, literacy or some sort of English, because I remember when it seems weird, but it wasn't until I started taking a foreign language, I didn't really understand what an infinitive or preposition was. But once you could see it, you're like, oh, that's what it is.
Right.
I could see that, you know, being not just something separate, but helping build upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Just one other question, you were talking about the personnel. Is, you know, we have dual, is it certified teachers for, you know, Spanish or different languages?
Mm-hmm.
Could that play a role as a part of this?
What do you mean?
And helping out with the FLEX or?
Well, probably Probably not. I mean, just our current foreign language teachers have a full load. I think we might have a couple teachers who are certified to be able to teach it, because that was one thing as part of our research. And there's a couple of universities that I think are starting to reach out and encourage foreign language instruction at the elementary level. But a lot of universities haven't focused on the elementary level. It's usually more middle and high. So if you want to do some looking, but I think we might have a couple elementary teachers, only a few, that do have their certification to be able to teach at the elementary level. So that they might be useful.
And this might be getting out of it, but the dual language program would basically take the place of the bilingual program that's now. So that's mostly focused towards the ELL kids?
The Spanish bilingual kids. Because we have a lot of kids who just receive ESL services or ELL that aren't in that program, so it's really focused on that. And what would happen at kindergarten, and all of the districts start higher with their kindergarten numbers because they tend to lose some kids along the way and they want to end up with a full class of kids. So at kindergarten, you have two sections. There's 12 English, 12 Spanish. 12 English and 12 Spanish. So that at first grade, then, you still have kind of those two sections, but as time goes on, sometimes it ends up being just one section. So it meets the needs of our bilingual program, but then we give that opportunity to a class full of a typical class of English only kids. So you're not really adding staff, you're kind of using existing staff. Does that make sense?
Yes. And with the FLESS system, who's going to be, is the administration that's going to choose the language, or is it going to be parental influence, or how's that going?
Those would all be things that we would be considering in that. Sometimes it's kind of like the popular language, like right now it's Chinese. You know, Japanese was back in the 90s, and so it somewhat depends. That kind of the steering committee or task force would probably get parent input. I just remember when we brought foreign language to our junior high, which obviously the district's a little behind where we are here, they let every middle school pick. So one middle school offered German and Spanish, the other one was offered French and Spanish, and then we got, you know, it didn't really kind of make sense, so we probably won't go the route of voting on, you know, what everybody would want, but we would get input. And I think that would be a good one with parental input. The problem is I would be concerned if we wanted to kind of do an open enrollment. If you want Chinese, you can go to this school because they're doing Chinese. We have to be a little careful.
In space.
Yeah. You know, clearly Spanish is probably the most predominant, but it's not the only. And we want to track the data. High school has Chinese right now, like how successful their program has been, and you know, some of those kinds of things. But currently, I could tell you that's probably a second choice among
the middle school is Spanish now. What the time block is, how long?
45 minutes per day. Mm-hmm.
Each day?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a regular class. I mean, it's like same as social studies or science. It's a 45-minute block every day.
But not everyone does it or do it.
Almost.
Yeah, it's an exploratory.
But I mean, percentage-wise, would you say? I mean,
well, I overinflated that percentage. I think 90. But Karen said it's like 70 to 75% of the seventh graders would take it.
Well, I think most computer is exploratory. There's like the AV schedule, so
this one's still every day. Some of them are every day. Right. And we talked a little bit earlier at finance and that, and that this ultimately would have implications at the junior high and then the high school from a dual language perspective. they tend to offer content in the second language, so Spanish, it would be, like social studies could be in Spanish, or it might be science in Spanish, something like that. So those kids are really on a different track than our kids who are just entering foreign language at the junior high. By the time our elementary FLES program, kind of the kids were strong enough, it would be, it would take us a few years to get where we want to see an impact at Hadley and then at the high school, which is why the Spanish textbook adoption out there, I mean, by the time we really got to that, we'd be ready for another one anyway. So the time would be off, and we're not spending dollars that we won't be able to access over the next 5 or 6 years.
The elementary FLES week, would that be mandatory for all the kids?
Mm-hmm.
Or
it would be like going to art, music, or PE.
Right. And the different districts that we talked with, they didn't exclude kids. The special needs kids weren't excluded. They were not excluded from dual language. So you would offer it to everybody. And obviously, kids will make a different rate of progress with it. But.
Any questions, comments?
No, oh, go ahead.
No, please.
You have the same question? Would you like to pass it down?
One last
one.
And John and I kind of had a second talk because I know he's been on the site visits, and I didn't have, unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend. And when I kind of first was reading through the summary, my first response to it was, I felt like this was not language, like the presentation feels very much like we're working more with our ELL kids, that the dual language is more about bringing the ELL kids up and not so much a program for all. And I know the FLES is out there, but my feeling is that, and I, whatever the research says, which program to bring forward, I'm supportive of. And I understand the recommendation that way. But this doesn't feel like foreign language for all, which is really, from my perspective, what the board is looking for, or what our hope was when we really pushed foreign language. The timeline for it feels very much like another way to help get our ELL students moving along in their education, not 3 more years out or 2 more years out, whatever it is, to getting foreign language in our buildings. And I guess from that perspective, I'm a little disappointed. That said, it'll be, the implications are so great in terms of time. Where do we find the time to implement it in the day? It's a staff issue. I mean, are we going to extend our school day, which I think, most of us are looking at it going, okay, how are you going to cut, are we going to have less science? And so, I mean, like, what are we going to take away that, to get this in there? And so my hope is that people are a little more open-minded about the cost, because it's probably a much greater cost implication than this figure that's given, because it is possibly looking at a longer day because we need more minutes. You just can't get it all done. That's just sort of, most of my other kind of questions are more things that are, 12 steps ahead in terms of how, what the makeup of it would be. But, again, I think, going through and reading this, I think it's hard for a lot of people in our community to wrap our heads around the demographics of our schools. Because, truthfully, a dual language program at Churchill, we already have how many bilingual classrooms in that building, because that's what's needed there. But, the parity, the ability to put a little more parity in our other buildings, it's going to take us a while to get there. And I recognize that given the demographics of our buildings, dual language programs are probably not going to be feasible at all of our buildings, just because you won't have enough kids for 50-50. But
unless you did immersion.
Right. Unless you did immersion. Right. But there's space and cost. I mean, there's greater implications.
There's a greater cost implication to an immersion program that's expanded beyond a dual language program in the first year.
Right. So I just... Go ahead.
Yeah, I echo some of the comments. I sort of wanted us to be bolder here. That's, you know, it's always been my passion, you know, to get foreign language here, and I just don't think we're being bold enough. So, you know, for me, this wasn't about addressing a demographic issue, right? It was about providing foreign language to all our kids, right? It's that simple. You know, when I look at $350,000 to be able to do that, and I think, you know, we spent $1 million on a parking lot, X amount on a courtyard, I'm like, you know, this is in the classroom, it's cognitive, it's what we should be doing. So for me, I think part of where I'm a little confused is as I recall the research from the visits we did, is that the dual program, the immersion program, was really largely aimed, you know, at the Hispanic kids that had Spanish as their first language. There was also a group of kids that were non-Spanish speaking that were incorporated. So, you know, let's just call it a 50-50 mix. And as I recall, their data was that at the end of, you know, sixth or eighth grade, the Spanish speaking kids didn't differentiate themselves from the other Spanish speaking kids that were not in the program. In other words, there was no benefit to the program in that respect. Now, clearly, there's all the cognitive and the behavioral stuff that you get with a foreign language. So I don't know, for me, I don't know that I would start there. I mean, I would like us to look at a foreign language program for the kids. To be honest, I would have thought it would cost a lot more than this. And I'm
it is going to cost more. That's minimal. I mean, that's...
Okay, but you know, it's in the classroom. It's about a lot of things. It supports the research, right? Learn it before you're 10. Understand how grammar works in different languages. I just think that we should be bolder here,
answer a couple of them?
Yeah.
When you talked about the benefits, or you didn't really see the benefits, particularly let's say with Spanish speaking, those districts that started out with 90-10, in other words, they did 90 in Spanish, 10 in English, or 80, mm-hmm. and then 20, and then they gradually add more English. What those districts found is there were great benefits to the English-speaking kids in the program, and they exceeded their peers.
Correct. They were ahead of their peers.
Right. But those Spanish-speaking kids did not. They continued to lag behind. And when I asked, in particular in Barrington, they felt some of it was socioeconomic status. And then when we went to Schaumburg, their research was showing the same thing. And that's why they switched to starting out at 50-50. With the 50-50, their Spanish-speaking kids' scores are comparable to the English-speaking.
Because I thought Oak Park, I thought
they
were 50-50 too.
They kind of had an unusual combination. And remember, they don't have any native speakers. Theirs is immersion. They didn't have any Spanish-speaking kids.
Well, they had some Spanish. I mean,
right, but not enough that it was dual language. Most, all of their primary language was English. So it was more of an immersion model.
I don't know demographic. I felt, in the classroom, I felt it was like 40 Hispanic and 60 not.
They just didn't have enough native speakers that they do an immersion. And that's the school that parents have to pick a track. They either pick that or looping. I mean, there's, you know, that's just how they've kind of structured the system of that. So that would be the reason why we do 50-50. And when you say it meets the needs of ELL kids, it's really, you know, the dual language addresses the bilingual problem, which is what we have. Now, if you say to us, no, we want you to plan both next year. I mean, that's an option. I'm back next board meeting to share some information with you about Think Tank. And that's kind of a totally different look at the school day. So it's kind of like there's some other information I'll be sharing that might help put some things in perspective. Mm-hmm. Even with the work of the Think Tank, we're still committed to foreign language as a part of that. So I want you to know that, but it is kind of
everything on that day. My input is obviously just me personally, I think foreign language has a lot of benefits in education. A lot of other countries do it, and I would just look for something bolder and quicker. I don't think, and I know I'm not in this environment, but plenty of school districts or plenty of folks teach French, Spanish, Italian, German. Should be pretty easy to ramp up and get a program going, and I would suggest 90 minutes a week instead of 75, and just get it going.
I wasn't actually going to ask you if there was a way to accelerate the process. Maybe there is.
Well, really, give us some feedback, because you can hear that there's, you know, interest in how do you. But tell us the truth. You're the one. You mean, to John's point, we're not doing it. You're the ones working with the kids. You see all the nuance that we don't in terms of how do you make this work. You know, we don't live there.
I think the only thing that I would caution in doing that is based on the school districts that we did visit, one thing that they mentioned is do it and do it right. So make sure that you have all the steps in place for one program before you go and try to build another. Because when you try to do them simultaneously, it becomes difficult to do everything the right way. And so from all the districts that we went to visit, that was the common message, was do it and do it right and make sure you have all your pieces in order. Instead of kind of trying to do everything at the same time, you don't really put as much, I don't know if dedication is the right word, but you're just trying to put everything together so quickly, you're not thinking through all of the processes.
So to that point, I would start with the FLES, because it impacts more kids.
Can you do the FLES first and then do the...
And then work into the
dual language next? So bilingual is already in place.
Right.
I guess I would rather try to do both than to move class ahead of it. You know,
love that answer too.
and Karen,
and there'll be other things we'll take off the plate. Then we'd have to.
Right, we have to.
And I would encourage you to let's hold this discussion if we can until after we talk about the work of another group that has been working equally hard on the think tank and looking at the structure of the school day and maybe putting all of the pieces together is more appropriate, you know, at this point.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like we're missing a piece that you
perhaps
have in your head and you're seeing the connections, which it will be important. Yeah.
I mean, if this think tank stuff is really out there, then, I mean, at this point, as much as I hate to say it, I would take the dual program off if the think tank's going to distract us so much until that's done, and then do this all together at once.
And I guess that that's it, Sharon. I mean, I think, obviously, we're possibly missing a piece to this puzzle, and as much as we've sort of followed along what you guys have been doing in this process, I think you know us in that we hope that things move faster than it is. And while I completely agree, you know, do it once, do it the right way, don't, you know, I'll go back to having new horizons and how long it seemed to take, yet, and there's always a little glitch here and there, but it's an outstanding program and the model that has just flourished at Hadley. You don't want this to fail. On the flip side of that, it's sort of like, I think John, when you know, John's point is, you know, it just feels like it's a smaller demographic, and we already have our bilingual programs. And Katie, I know you're working on changing some of those things and improving those programs to help those kids. Or I'm sorry, I don't want to say it like that. Mm-hmm. To help that population of kids who are struggling, the feeling is often that we are leaving the larger number of our kids. We're not doing what we should be doing for them. And I think that is what we often struggle with. So, I mean, again, I would rather see the FLES in before the dual language program. If we had to separate the two, I will rely on, obviously, the expertise of your group and what comes forward. We are not in the this is not what we do. I'm sure Karen and your department at Hadley have quite input given they're going to all land in the building at some point and making sure that the flow of it into the high school is proper, because we don't want the kids to be so far ahead that then they get to high school and they're twirling their thumbs and that's not there either. But, you know, and again, I...
That should be a part of it, right?
That should be a part of it. And there's high school people...
several years because you're not going to start at fifth grade. You're going to start at kindergarten and roll that up.
Right, and roll it up, and it takes a while for it to get there. But
or first grade.
Whatever it is. But I also want to remind the board that there's a major cost implication. And at some point, I guess I would, in light of the time that I know your group will be putting into this, at some point if the cost becomes, oh my gosh, this is what it's going to cost, I'm hoping you're going to come to us and say, guys, this is what it is, because I don't want to see, and I'm sure most of us don't want to see you guys go through this process and then have it come back to us and go, we can't spend that kind of money. You know, we can't do that. And that we don't want to waste anybody's time to do that. Because this is going to cost money. This is not a walk in the park.
So, I don't want any of you guys to feel that this was not a great discussion, because it was. We just want more of it, that's all. That's what it's really about. More of it for everybody, that's my opinion. I don't really care what they think.
I don't really care what?
What the rest of us think.
More senior care.
On the record. I just want to echo actually what Karen and John, we've all said too, is there's a ton of work. I want to thank our parent who's here, who's, as Karen said, hung into it. I know that John got a site visit. I got to go to Barrington, which was very eye-opening. And it's not lost on us how much effort goes into this. And I'm really glad to hear you say, Katie, that we want to make sure those processes are in place so we do the right kind of management of the program. And when it hits the ground running, it hits the ground running. So that's a key issue for me as well. So thank you for all the time and for the continued time. And step one is done. We'll look forward to step two and three and think tank.
So what, speaking of step two, when can we see a new plan? Or
I think Karen's got that on.
Well, and John, I think you need, you've left the committee hear your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to let them go back and talk about that and work through it and decide whether it's...
That's what I'm asking. So I guess the next board meeting, would you guys have had a chance to meet?
No, next year. Next August or...
Well, next board meeting you'll hear the think tank. And then you're going to kind of have to put it all together in your mind what that might look like, because that is another one where we're looking at implementing 13-14. So there'd be a lot hitting that year, and you just kind of have to weigh what's going to make the most sense. I mean, we can go back and talk a little bit more. And, I mean, the main conversation is going to be, is it something we feel like we could manage?
And I think we need to flesh out the cost a little bit more
before
we bring it back. And
the way I'm looking at this, right, is that the next steps would have been some sort of steering committee in 2012 or 13,
right,
for the Spanish dual language program. And so at some point, I just don't want to lose this one and crack somewhere. So when can we expect to come back and understand what steering committee may or may not be formed in 2012 or 13? It obviously has to be after the think tank conversation. So should we expect that sometime in July?
We don't meet in July.
August?
Well, I would say whether it's August or September, and we would still be forming that steering committee, it wouldn't prevent us from doing anything next year. I mean, once, if we were to land that this is what we can manage and this is what we think it's going to cost. And so even though as long as it's by early September, I feel like you'd have a sense, and then we form whether we'd be forming one or two steering committees.
So assuming we just went crazy and decided we're going with a dual language, we're going with a foreign language program, and we're doing everything. You're saying that if we started that steering committee sometime in September or October of this year, we could be in a position to implement the following year. That would be plenty of time to do that. We don't have to worry that it could be.
Right.
I'm good.
You have to have a short timeline, because if you are doing labs, to get out ahead of postings to hire that many elementary foreign language teachers, I mean, that...
And remember, John, that there's a great deal of the research in the summary and more documentation that they have that's already been done. So in terms of the advice they've gathered, the things, they really would need to come together and fine-tune a recommendation. But I think one of the things we just have to do first is try to get a better handle on the cost so that you, in fact, can approve it. Mm-hmm. Because
I agree.
So that's something we could do in the summer. We would have more time to work on what the cost implications would be and bring that to you early.
And everybody sort of abandoned the idea of Latin in first, second, and third grade and then going foreign language in fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth.
Did we ever
talk about that? I think that was a dream you had.
That doesn't work right now.
The Kenwood foreign language program is at...
I don't know if Latin or Latin.
Latin's great, but it's not on the
same.
I had to try. Well, thank you, Ellen.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, everybody, for all your time and continued time. Appreciate it. Yeah.
And Katie, we're glad we have a signed contract.
Yeah.
I said we're glad we have a signed contract.
Hit the ground running.
She can't run for a year and nine.
Thank you.
For 1 year.
All right, we are under the consent agenda. Are there any items the board members that board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately?
Yes.
Which one?
The personnel report.
Okay, under human resources? Okay. That whole section will be taken out. Okay. Then we'll move to other matters. What we'll do is when we return from closed session after we discuss that, we'll take action on that section. Okay? So under consent agenda, is there anything else people want removed? We're good? Okay. The second section is under other matters, which is are the board meeting minutes from the April 23rd, 2012 regular meeting and the April 23rd, 2012 regular meeting closed session. May I have a motion to approve that portion of the consent agenda?
Second.
Section 2.
Finance facilities
and
operations handling
your
vote. Wasn't there some policies?
That is not
that's
on the second.
Here it is.
Here.
Under here, it's not on my
Have
I'm sorry. It was left out. Thank you, Bob.
So, sorry, what are you doing?
So what was left out of my notes to include finance and facilities, so let me include that in. So we have other matters, board meeting minutes, April 23rd, 2012 regular meeting, April 23rd, 2012 regular meeting closed session, the finance, facilities, and operations, Hadley Junior High yearbook printing recommendation, and that's it.
Calendar, okay. 2011-12.
And the 2011-12 calendar other matters.
Motion.
All right.
Second.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Power?
Yes.
Mr. Glass?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right. Superintendent recommendations. The administration is recommending that the board approve the following recommendations. Number one, iPad rollout for exploratory and elementary schools. The purchase of 120 iPads directly from Apple in the amount of $66,960. The administration also recommends purchasing the iPads through American Capital with a 3-year fair market value lease. The annual cost of the lease will be $21,544. At the end of the 3-year lease, the total investment will be $64,632. I have a motion to approve this recommendation as presented.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion. Hearing none, roll call please.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item 2, elementary school computer refresh. The purchase of 245 desktops and monitors and 550 laptops from Tiger Direct through American Capital Leasing with a 5-year dollar buyout lease. The annual cost will be $40,520.33, with a total cost by the end of the 5-year lease of $202,601.67. The administration is recommending purchasing the laptops through American Capital Leasing with a 3-year fair market value lease. The annual cost will be $25,736.64, with a total cost at the end of the lease of $377,209.91. Additionally, the administration is recommending the purchase of 27 storage carts from Tiger Direct through Heartland Business Solutions for $32,076.54. May I have a motion to approve this recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion?
Mike, these costs are obviously part of your budget plan. That it's something that's not already taken into account.
Correct.
Any other comments, questions? Roll call, please.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Towers?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item 3, food service POS acquisition, the purchase of the Skyward Food Service Management Software module in the amount of $27,643 for implementation at the 4 elementary schools during the summer of 2012. May I have a motion to approve this recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion?
I need a four-year-old's interpretation of what this really means.
It means that students will be issued ID cards, and parents can put money into an account for students so that they can purchase a lunch, should they choose to do so, on any given day. And so it's a cashless system. Students aren't bringing money in their lunch. They're not paying for it a month in advance by a check to the school. They're not bringing money in their pocket that day to school. It's a cashless system, similar to what we have at Hadley.
So you can choose, day by day you can choose?
Correct. Because as long as you have money in your account, you can purchase a lunch on a day-to-day basis, and the school will ask who's getting lunch today, and students will identify, you know, that they are getting lunch or not, and then they would just use their card when they...
So it's like a physical swipe system that needs to be put in place in the buildings to facilitate.
So we have it handled.
At the elementary level, it's a one choice or nothing, right?
There's correct. No, correct.
I can choose.
Yeah, it's not like the kiosk approach. It's a little more simplified.
Right. First debit card your kid will ever get.
They don't get to take it home.
It stays at school.
Right.
Oh,
nice. And they just turn it in, and then it's swiped after lunch, and then returned.
There's a tie-in to the free envelopes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So your ID card doesn't identify you one way or the other, but all students would have an ID card, which is another... benefit to it. It doesn't unduly identify students who may be in need.
But the system would.
Yes, reflects that.
Could disseminate.
Absolutely.
You know, who's,
absolutely.
Who is
it? It's in our Skyward. It's a Skyward
part of software.
Is there a new, when parents put money on, is it something new or different? Is it tied to some other, I'm just worried about another login for parents.
No, it'll be it'll be through RoughTrack, so it will be through the normal, the store that they have, that they use now to pay online. So it'll be another line item or another item to buy. It should not require another password file in that respect. That's one reason for bringing into the Skyward family project.
Yeah.
And it will also replace, it's replacing the system we currently have at Happy Nellis. All five buildings will be under one thing, and the child account will start with them in first grade and will follow them to eighth grade. So there's no longer with us, their balance will be
Well, so you mean like in Lincoln, this PTA website you go out to do the hot lunch and all these other programs. So is that what you mean?
No, it's
no, it'll be, it's the website where you pay your school fee. Not the PTA fee. I believe the PTA may use RoundTrack though. But it would be the link that would help. You would go in through Skyward Family Access and it would link you over to pay the fees and then also put money on the account. Mm-hmm. And we will take deposits at the office also if parents want to pay online. But it's only through the office and check. Like we do at Haley now. But we would definitely encourage.
Then,
you know, a parent can also go in and confirm that they ate a lunch.
That
they, like,
it had
that information,
what
they actually ate.
plot, right? I mean, there's been a picture of it.
True. We're not filming from the dead
table. Eating was highly individualized.
Yeah. Right.
So you know how many bags of chips that your kids bought just by the fact you sent them with a lunch.
Right.
Got it. Okay. Anything else? Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes. Mr.
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Are we
going?
Yes.
Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Item 4, final phase of the smart board rollout, the purchase of 75 smart boards with materials and installation from Chicago Office Technology Group. Administration recommends purchasing the hardware and materials with a five-year dollar buyout lease through American Capital Leasing. The annual cost for the lease will be $23,890.76. Total lease cost after 5 years will be $119,453.80. The administration recommends paying for the labor costs in the amount of $13,125 with a one-time payment with budgeted funds from the 2012-2013 budget upon satisfactory completion of the work. The total investment by the end of the lease for hardware and installation will be $132,578.80. Chicago Office Technology Group also offers free access to their certified smart trainers for their customers. May I have a motion to approve this recommendation as presented?
Motion. Second.
Discussion?
Mike, I'm sorry. Please refresh my memory. Does this include Hadley, so we'll have them in every room throughout the building?
Yes, it does include
Hadley. Thank you.
Is it the same vendor as we got the other?
Anything else? Roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Powell?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item 5, the 2012 summer painting projects. The administration is recommending the acceptance of a low bid of $180,080 from Bill's Painting to repaint Benjamin Franklin, Forest Glen, and Churchill Schools. May I have a motion to approve this recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion?
I'll vote no, but I don't know if it's worth discussing. I just don't see the need right now.
The painting that's done, I know somewhere down the road, or down the line tonight, there will be some more 21st century classrooms being done. Yeah. So the painting will also reflect that as well.
The painting will include we painted Lincoln last year,
right.
21st century concept.
Right.
These three additional buildings will finish the elementary schools in terms of introducing the 21st century concept into those buildings.
All classrooms, always.
We did, you know, I know that you brought this up before, John. We did ask the question at the last meeting, which was, a couple of weeks ago. All these buildings are up for painting refreshed. They haven't been done in
20 years. They've not been painted since the referendum 13, 14
years ago.
Years
right.
Ago.
So whether it's white paint or 21st century concept paint, painting needs to happen.
And there isn't any different cost between white painting, normal painting, and 21st century painting.
We bid it as a concept
we're
presenting.
Mm-hmm.
John, can I ask, is it related to the trying something new rather than just painting, or is there something else? Just because, I was looking at...
Oh, you're asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
I just wanted to understand, is it related to the, why are we just painting, why don't we reconfigure, or is that what...
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just... You know, spending money, painting, I know it's a maintenance item, but it's one that can wait. And I prefer to spend money on some of this other stuff we're doing, smart boards, furniture, mm-hmm. and getting that classroom going, the pilot mm-hmm. classroom.
Well, I know that concern has come up before, and we vetted it a little bit. I know we asked that question. Is this mutually exclusive? I mean, that there's dollars for these pieces that you've budgeted into the budget to do, so...
Well, I also look at, the other expenditures that we would like to do in facilities over the next 3 years, mm-hmm. which is significantly above our normally budgeted facilities plan. So there's a lot to do. So mm-hmm. This one just not a priority for me.
Okay. Anything else?
I'm just going to say, I was adding everything up as we talked about the carpet for the classrooms at finance today. And so... including the technology, all in, we're talking around $420,000 for furniture, paint, and carpet for these 21st century classrooms.
Paint being for every room.
Okay.
I think it's a great price. Good job getting that price.
It's a good thing. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Eller?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
No.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mrs. Melton?
Yes. Item 6, 2012 furniture bid results. The rollout of the 21st century classroom concept and purchase from multiple vendors, classroom furniture totaling $229,841.07. May I have a motion to approve this recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
Well, I mean, we're not only upgrading it, so to speak, to 21st century, but we're also replacing furniture that needs to be replaced.
And just redistributing it as appropriate. So some of it that we might redistribute to other classrooms and remove other pieces of furniture, such as desks and student teacher desks in particular. We asked principals last week to identify any desks that might be in need of replacement and move them out of the 21st century classrooms into those classrooms and move to the same desks.
Is this has the auditorium seating? Is that?
Mm-hmm. So it's a smaller portion, but
it's replacement of desk, but I think another 6th grade classroom is the furniture. Hadley is 21st, that's 24 classrooms at the elementary level, as well as the seating in the auditorium at Hadley. And then miscellaneous equipment that sort of on our annual refresh.
This might be a side issue, but the 24 classrooms, have they been identified, or is that just a number that
tomorrow is the due date?
And is there any talk about any of these, you know, 21st century pieces going in at Hadley? I mean, I know.
Well, as we've said before, what we believe that the desks that we've been purchasing provide the flexibility that we want for future classrooms there, because they're flat top desks, mm-hmm. so they can be arranged in a different arrangement than our elementary desks are, because they're more of that turkey right. shape or whatever. Boomerang shape. But offer that same flexibility we were looking for. So as a long-term purchase, that was part of our intent. The first project that we will associate with Hadley in 21st century will be the LLC. And we've begun that work in the committee at Hadley right now. But that'll be the first location to be kind of altered. I think after that will be, you know, classrooms may look very similar to what they are right now. The technology has already been added. We may be looking at increasing lab space and reconfiguring rooms, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Eller?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Fenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Item 7, School Board Policy Procedure Revisions. The adoption of the following policy procedure revisions stated item 1, section 2, school board, 2, 150 committees. Item 2, section 4, under operations, all policies and procedures. And item 3, section 7, students, item policy 720, harassment of student prohibited. May I have a motion to approve this recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
I just had one comment on the 2150. The way I read it was all board, all appointed committees need to be approved by the board.
I would agree with that.
That's the way it was worded. I just wanted to make sure. I know in our discussions, I didn't know that we had gone to all committees, but that's the understanding of the way I should interpret that.
Correct. Okay. Any other comments? Thank you. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Eller?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Superintendent's report.
I just am going to just quickly identify with pride that we are seeing an increasing number of our teachers present programs, to national conferences that are related to work that's being done in our district. And I think, you know, that's a really great sign that some of the confidence level of work that's being done is, you know, ready to take it on the road. And I just wanted to highlight a couple of those that are happening. Two coming out of Hadley for the National Middle School Conference next fall will be on the student team building efforts that have been occurring over the last several years. And then two teachers will be presenting, had a presentation accepted on co-teaching, the co-teaching model that Hadley's been using. Rejected from them was the schedule, which we thought was for sure would be a big one. But the benefit is that we have been accepted at the III conference on Hadley's schedule as a carousel, which is that roundtable discussion, in addition to changing our facilities to mirror 21st century learning. And our literacy specialist will be presenting at the National Council of Teachers of English this fall about the coaching model. And additionally, I sent you in your Thursday letter that two of our teachers are featured in a video series on coaching and the benefits of that, which is being picked up by the Harvard Education Group. So that's pretty impressive. And so we're very proud of our teachers getting out there and presenting some of the good work they're doing.
Yeah. Very exciting. All right, board reports.
I attended the Forest Glen PTA meeting on April 30th. There was a couple of questions around people, because of all the technology that we're voting in, they just have some questions about if we're going to be able to support all this. And so I had some help from Mary to kind of answer that and show how the different ways to be able to support that technology. Then they had a new board that was elected. Real quickly, the president was Jim Lewis, vice president Becky English and Christy Breuer, treasurer Mary Norris, and secretary Joe Child.
Okay, thank you. Unfortunately, was not able to attend LLT this month, but in terms of what went on at LLT, sorry, Karen, and of course I forgot to let you know that, but some of the things that, again, a lot of focus this year has been on our learner characteristics and getting them in the buildings and in the classroom. So they talked about creating a student survey self-assessment of the learner characteristics to be used maybe halfway through the year next year. Hopefully leading to, you know, student goal setting with their learner characteristics. So also embedding the learner characteristics in the cool tools that are being used in our buildings. And there was CASES establishing an assisted technology task force, and that we'll have people from our buildings that will be on that. It sounds like that's due to legislation, that there's a lot more focus on assistive technology for our IEP students, so with student IEPs, excuse me. So, you know, once again, making sure that we're up to code and doing what we need to do for our kids. And honoring Jan Reich, how many years was she on LLT?
Since it began.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. So, and so she's finally off it. Maybe for her own sake, I'm sure. But thanking her for her contributions over the years.
Any other board reports? I went to the LEND meeting a couple of weeks ago, and there was a special presentation by Dr. Darlene Rossetti, who's the superintendent for our Regional Office of Education, and she just kind of brought the group up to speed on what's been going on with some of the look at ROEs across the state and how they might collapse some of those, and you know, was I think optimistic about the recognition of the value of ROEs, and had some kudos for DuPage's as one of the most productive from a return on investment standpoint in terms of dollars spent, and also the professional development that comes out of the office as well. So She feels like that's been a good exercise, albeit a little challenging at times, to have people have better understanding of what the ROEs do and their value. The other thing that Peg Agnos went through, a whole thing of bills. I know we all get the lend information. There was a call to action that came out this week.
We sent letters today.
And we sent letters out. Great. Good. Which was great because they want to know what that impact's going to be in terms of the pension reform, and it's important. And then the last thing is that Representative Pijos has been named the minority spokesperson on the budget, which is good for us because she's, has been a school board member and has, been in her position for a long, long time and is certainly a supporter of DuPage County, so that was good news as well. Another one meeting coming up
next Friday.
Yeah, next Friday. All right. Thank you.
Dan and I and Ann also attended the ISBA spring dinner.
There you go.
And it was a presentation of the Common Core standards. The Bensonville district gave a presentation on their sixth grade.
They just gave that as an example of how they had adjusted from the Illinois standards to the Common Core and provided a template, which we gave to you in your Thursday letter, and I provided you a sample of what we've been doing.
Yeah. There's also I can't remember her name from the state board that also gave a talk.
What's her name?
Her.
What's her title?
She's their assistant superintendent.
Chris Cox.
She gave a presentation.
On the Common Core standards, as well as a couple other things.
Is that your alma mater?
I know. I was so disappointed that I couldn't be there.
Looks very nice. They've done a nice retrofit.
Yeah.
Got a tour. Got to see the clothes. There's a different kind of theater.
Black box.
The Black Box Theater. They have the new field house. All of these STEM labs. I mean, it was very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for being able to go there. That's great. And Sam, too. All right, discussion items.
Our first discussion item, and just want to give you a little overview of how we're going to proceed with this, will be our budget proposal for next year. And we'll put this on for discussion now. You will take action at the second meeting of June on the budget. And in between now and that time, any questions that you may have of the budget, you should send to Bob or me, or actually better to copy both of us on it or any member of the Finance Committee, and we'll make sure we get those questions answered. Bob will put something in writing, and then any discussions we have, it'll be a standing item on the Finance Committee for the next few meetings prior to the board taking action. So Bob, go ahead and talk to us about our budget.
So, just to give you a little, this evening's presentation will be on the preliminary budget. We will again bring this back to the board as a presentation, or actually a discussion item, at the second board meeting in June.
Mm-hmm.
Second board meeting in June, where we'll ask your permission to go out and post the budget. Then it will stay posted from June and July and into August. And then we'll bring back the preliminary budget and ask for adoption at the second board meeting in August.
Again, but it will be action. You'll take action on the posting of it. It won't be a discussion item. It'll be an action item at that second meeting in June.
Sorry for the slip of terms. Again, anytime you have questions throughout the next couple of months, you're more than welcome to email me, and I will get back as quickly as possible with the response. And again, the numbers that you receive this evening will probably change, and I won't say significantly, will probably change between now and June and then again in August. Okay, so this is a sheet that was developed a couple of years ago that basically highlights the changes from last year's budget to this year's budget. As you know, last year we started with revenues of $45.9 million. This past December, the board approved the levy where we were going to abate the bond and interest fund to the tune of $2,727,800. Overall, that results in a net decrease of just in excess of $1.8 million for this from last year's levy that will be used in this year's budget. CPP, our KEDA corporate personal property replacement taxes, basically is tracking a little bit higher than what we had originally presented in this current year's budget. So we've upped that amount to about by about $57,000. As you know, through receiving and reviewing the monthly treasurer's report, we're still receiving at least what I would consider almost historical lows on returns of investments. So we've taken that down another $53,000. Just to give an example, earlier this evening at the Finance Committee meeting, we were looking at interest rate revenue that detectives have received over the past 5 years, and it's gone from $1.2 or $1.3 million down to about $165,000, about over $1 million decrease in 5 years. So pretty significant decrease. Other local revenues are going to go up slightly to the by approximately $94,000. Talked about general state aid. I have not changed the number between this year and last year, but we'll probably make some revisions in the budget that you're going to see in June, because what we're hearing now is that general state aid will be prorated at 95% for this year, which means we won't be getting one payment during the month of June. And then we're hearing next year is probably going to be prorated at another 95%. So a 10% decrease over a two-year period. Special education and bilingual education, we held pretty much the same. Transportation, we received very little in terms of regular student education transportation. This is from special education reimbursement. We're going to increase that by about $262,000. Pre-K went up $36,000, and that is specifically in regards to the baby and E program. I'm going over this kind of quickly, but there's a summary that you have in front of you that highlights the revenues and expenditures, the changes that exist between those numbers for this proposed 2013 and last year's budget. Dan, do you have a question?
Yeah, I know we've seen our transportation expenses track up for the special ed students, but how can the revenues go up?
What we did in the 11-12 budget is based on what we were hearing from Springfield. We did not budget, but we kind of reduced across all state funding the same amount. And as it turned out, they shifted it, and we're now getting 100% of special ed, and everything else is kind of like prorated out. So that's just reflecting bringing the special ed back up to.
Okay. To where it should be,
so it was a matter of when you're comparing a budget to a budget, we didn't budget the full allocation this year. Mm-hmm. So now we're realizing, okay. Same thing with the baby and me, the $36,000 there, we removed all pre-K money, including the baby and me, because we didn't know about it until after we had already gotten the budget. So then it's just reconciling that.
Okay. That's some of the difficult things trying to make a decision in terms of how we present the budget. Well, we really don't even know these numbers, and decisions aren't made until sometimes well after we have to have our budget approved.
So basically, you're saying you're expecting the budget to look pretty poor.
Basically, what I'm saying is that I expect revenues to come in at $44.5 million, which are $1.4 million less than last year. Of that amount, $1.8 million. is a direct result of the abatement on the tax budget. Then I will talk very briefly about the expenditures. I'm looking at Mike.
Mike, what do I do?
Get your finger up here.
Put your finger over it, Bob. Okay, so I'm just going to go briefly through these expenditure items. Last year we had an adopted budget of almost $45.4 million. Salaries we've increased by almost $645,000. Medical and dental we've taken up by 5% respectively. We'll make some adjustments between now and the final budget revisions because we just recently got our renewals for the PPO. For both medical as well as dental. Purchase services went up. Primarily it was a result of transportation and contracted services, things that we'll need in buildings and grounds out of the O&M fund, and then even more particularly expenditures that will come as a result of increased spending to technology. Supplies and materials down slightly, $135,000. and then we expect the capital expenditures to go up about $268,000. Minor increases due to special education tuition payments that increased by about $58,000. Overall, we expect expenditures to come in at about $47,100,000. That's a net increase of $1,750,000 over last year's budget to tie out to a projected deficit at this point in time to $2.6 million as a deficit. Again, please keep in mind that we abated just in excess of $2.7 million in December. So,
so Bob, I would have thought the capital expenditures was more than $268 given the spreadsheet you gave us, you know, a few months ago.
These are the projects that have either already been approved by the board or those that are in the process of being approved this evening or something that we may have coming up in the near future. But these are, I budgeted for the numbers that you have acted on.
So, maybe I'm misunderstanding that spreadsheet, but so we don't plan, there's no plan to do the other things that added up to the $4 million.
No, that was just a problem. We were building a sort of a what-if situation that I think we talked about.
We're talking about the multi-year budget.
Yeah,
around
we
the
were getting, yeah, we were.
The levy time is when we presented that.
Yeah.
Okay. What was the? I'm sorry. What was the question?
John was looking at the kind of the what-if budget we showed you back during the levy presentation. What are the things that need to be done? I mean, we would never probably do $4 million of capital projects in a year unless it's works. And then we would be looking at probably taking a portion of our reserves to do so.
Mm-hmm. That was to give us a kind of a future focus.
That was to present you with the what we've identified as future projects over the next several years. Okay, so then I'm going to take you directly to the budget document. And I'm just going to run quickly through these because, again, we'll be presenting it again in about another month or so. So this is a spreadsheet that's broken down by funds. And I guess I would just want you to focus on the revenues and expenditures and then the excess deficit and or surplus by fund across the board here. We're expecting a slight surplus in the education fund of $623,000. All in on fund, we expect to experience a loss of about $685,000. Debt service, again, there's a $2.7 million deficit. Transportation, a slight surplus. IMRF, about a $42,000 deficit. And then capital projects, working cash, and torque. Just again, small surpluses for a total of $2.6 million. The fund summary, this is a sheet, a spreadsheet here that shows what the revenues and expenditures were and then the individual surpluses, which you just saw on the other summary sheet that was just provided. This is just presented in a little bit different format. Overall, you're talking revenues, a decrease of about 3.11%, and expenditures, an increase of about 3.86%.
A question again on transportation. Now this number is 489 versus 260. Is this related to, again, bumping up based on projected revenues, or why is that so much more?
What do you specifically?
The transportation is up.
Are you in expenditures or
revenues?
Revenues. And that was because we under budgeted so much in special education transportation reimbursement last year. We expect we've increased that revenue account by about $300,000 this year, maybe even a little bit more.
Well, that's what I heard on the 260 simply, but this is larger. Or this is 49.
So is this transportation including special ed and other transportation?
That's correct.
there's
all
other
forms of transportation.
That's all, so this would be, I see what you're saying, Dan. So this is all forms of transportation. The other one was...
Well, I'll give you an example. In this transportation, in this fund, we use for regular transportation, special ed transportation, something else that has come up over the past year or two, especially is transportation for our homeless population. That went up $60,000. So this is a result of all different types of transportation, not just regular education and special education.
What other revenues besides state do we get special ed transportation?
That's it. Primary sources of revenue in the transportation really are the levies. Mm-hmm. Anything else you can think of those?
No, not of
a major concern.
It could be also adjusted by.
Because if you recall a couple of years ago, that transportation fund, we were running out of money towards the mm-hmm. end of the year. Mm-hmm. So we
had to do a fund transfer.
Yeah.
When I did the levy, we put money, yeah. extra money, into the levy in the transportation fund so we wouldn't have that ongoing mm-hmm. outlay. Yeah. So maybe I wasn't making that clear.
Okay.
So what does our revenue look like and what are our major sources of it? Not much different from what we've seen previously. Our property taxes account for 87% of our revenue base, overall revenues. Other local revenues, student fees, food service programs, things of that nature, about 6%. State funding we're seeing at about 6%. Federal funding at about 1%. Those state and federal numbers were a little bit different a couple of years ago when we received some rather significant ERA dollars. That were pumped into the district here. So that's more of a, we typically receive around $500,000 in federal funding, and that's kind of what we're seeing a return to. Mm-hmm. We have several pages of different types of expenditures that break out everything between the education fund, the O&M fund, all of the funds, and by the different types of expenditures. Question?
One question on this page.
Sure.
The summer school we have listed down with salaries and supplies, materials, $104,000. It was my understanding that the software we purchased for $158,000 was replaced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. That'll have to be an adjustment in the budget.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Again, we work on a budget pretty much year round, so things are constantly changing.
So I just wanted to be clear, we're not
double
the hiring. People.
We're hiring a couple people to man the labs
right.
while they're open, but it won't amount to that amount.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I think this is a pretty helpful chart here. How does the district spend the money? Pretty consistent over the years. Almost 60% salaries and 12% benefits, so around 71-72%. We spend on salaries and benefits with the balance between our purchase services, supplies and materials, our capital projects, and then our other expenditures.
Bob, this is just sorry.
The other is typically a large portion of that is the tuition payments that we make to other school districts.
Ann had mentioned this in the Thursday letter. This is just a curiosity question, but I noticed that from the buildings that supplies requests had gone down by $130,000, something like
overall,
that.
Overall, from all buildings and departments
right.
within the district.
Does that have anything to do with, I don't know, less copying, more technology in the hands of students? I mean, just wonder what that's attributed to.
I think that would be a reasonable assumption.
Yeah.
That Mike is moving the district to more of a digital platform, and we just aren't in need of those types of supplies.
Yeah.
That's it for my presentation this evening. If there aren't any other questions, I'll conclude. And then if you have any questions, please send me an email or drop me a quick call, and I'll try to get a response to you as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
Bob. Well, Bob, we had talked a little bit about a finance committee, and I know it would be hard, but I still think it would be good if we could take a stab at, you know, we talked about our fund balance as percentage of revenues, and I know that it can be kind of tricky, but based on this budget, I think it would be helpful if you guys could take a stab at and anticipate.
I think it's on.
It's on there.
It's, on
it's
page
six,
one.
Like 15%.
Yeah, but I don't. That's not.
That's on a cash basis,
right?
It's not on an accrued basis,
right?
You're saying try to project what the accrued basis would be,
right? Which is what you know with our new policy, we look at it on a.
I think that will be difficult, but I think that's sort of the dilemma of that fund balance is that we do that accrual later, and so you're almost, if you're going to make plans to do something about that, either bring it up or bring it down, it's almost a year out of sync with it. We talked about that earlier.
Right, but I think we should take a guess and say if, you know, you can make assumptions. You can say if this amount of money comes in, if this is the expenditure, here's what we anticipate to be.
What's the? I see where you're going.
Take a look at that.
Yeah, I see where you're going with it. I guess I know that over the years we've talked about the difficulty of the moving target. I mean, as was evidenced in some of the budget discussions. So having that, Dan, on an accrual basis will do what for us? I guess I'm thinking of finance committee because we've talked about it in finance, and you know.
Well, it tracks back to our policy that we have.
Right, I understand that. I mean, one of my questions that I sent to Bob about the budget was. You know, we're not in a position to be concerned about overage right now in terms of reserve funds. So, you know, should we be, how do we talk about reserves, you know, building those up a bit or not? So I guess I'm just trying to, you know, that is certainly a question that I have and I want to understand.
Well, I think that's the piece that gets the conversation starting. You can see where you're going to be.
I guess my request would be what the accuracy of that is, because it's certainly and that's my concern.
I wouldn't bet my career on it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what I would like to conclude with was that is a conversation more based around the levy, which is 91 or 90 plus percent of our budget is based upon around the levy, and at that time we'll have accurate numbers that are on a fully accrued basis. Have been thoroughly reviewed by our auditors. That's something I would go to bat for.
Mm-hmm. So would it be hard for you to either say order of magnitude we're above the 25% or below the 10%? That, in other words, based on what you're thinking now, we'll either be between some, just giving you three choices, multiple choice, less than 10%, between 10 and 25%, or over 25%.
Oh, where do I think we'll end up at the end of the fiscal year?
Yeah.
I think we'll end up right around 25%.
Right. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah. I mean, I would hope with some of the projections that we do, I think we could get a lot closer. But
I mean, I think the point is I think what you're asking, if I was hearing that correctly, is we should know, hey, based on what we're budgeting here, do we think we're going to be below that 10%, which we said in our policy, not want to be, like in no case shall we, or are we over the 25%, or do we think we'll be in between those two?
And I'd just like to state also, as we spoke about at the finance meeting, one of the most difficult things that we have in projecting anything in the state budget, or in the budget right now, is that wild key with state expenditures. I mean, our state revenues could vary anywhere from being $500,000 off to $1.5 million off, and that's a significant contribution to our bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm not discounting that. But with anything, you can make assumptions. You could say, if it stays on target, it's this. If it falls below, it's this. And then, you know, if we can look at that and see, even if it falls off the map, we're still at some amount over, then we can start talking about what do we want to do with that? You know, do we want to accelerate the foreign language? Are there STEM labs that want us to get it right?
I think the key is to get a barometer of where we are in those three categories so we know, at the end of the day, what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Right. And June is, when we finish the month of June, we should have a pretty good idea of where we're at, because we track state revenue on a monthly basis, and then especially we'll have spent all of our expenditures by June 30th. We have all the payrolls that we'll be paying out there, so during the month of June. So I would say that would be a real good month. We'll have a pretty good idea of where we're going to end up from a budget perspective. But you still got that wild card out there where, you know, we receive as much as almost $500,000 in chunks from the state. I mean, we could not even receive it until after June 30th, sometime in July, and yet those numbers will come back. Look at your financial statements. We'll have that amount accrued in there. So we'll certainly take a look at it and see what we can come up with, and then Over the next month or so, we'll be presenting the third and fourth quarter financial results to the finance committee. So that we'll see what we can put together.
I mean, I don't think I would, and you guys will do a weird history, but I don't think I would put a ton of effort into getting, you know, we'll be at 23.73%.
Yeah,
right?
It's a little bit of my point is
where do we fit in each of the three categories, so we know whether we should be alarmed, feel good, or decide that maybe we got a little extra to do something.
Okay, Bob, real quickly on questions. I'm sure other board members have sent questions either through finance or to you. I don't need individual responses to mine, but if my questions fall into the bucket that other people have sent it in, then maybe we could just, it'd be easier for you to do a summary.
That's what he was planning on.
Great.
For everybody.
Okay. That'd be good.
And I guess just one more question. I think I asked this several years ago, but on the small amount of interest that we get, which I guess you consider a lot of money, but we could be doing better. There is no something we could take to the community or some way to get around these state laws to try to invest it in money to get a better return on our money, right? It is.
You know, it's by nature to be very conservative with community assets.
Right.
And we're getting, I don't know, 0.4% right now, something like that. I mean, I left Phyllis because Phyllis helped put together the treasury report. That's about what we're getting, and that's pretty much the norm out there right now.
But there's no
approach. You know, I mean, when you look at a policy on investments, it's pretty prescriptive.
Mm-hmm. Policy from the state.
No.
Well, it's based in the law.
Right. But that's what I mean. But there's no way to, you know, it's like, I'll use the example, right? We can't go build a building or whatever without a referendum, right? Is there something we could do to go to the public and say, hey, we'd like to do something different with our money to get this point? That's just not allowed.
Well, let me tell you that the public pools that we are members of, they go out to a national audience. And those banks throughout the country bid on those pools of dollars.
Yeah.
And overall, that's the kind of rate of return we're seeing.
There's no way around that, basically. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And John, it was interesting at finance we were looking at the dashboard that we're looking at rolling out. One of the items on there was revenues we've taken in as whole dollars on investment of that fund balance. I think it was like 3-4 years ago you were looking at $1 to $1.5 million.
Right.
Whereas last year we pulled
$165,000.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. 10 positions.
Yeah.
Well, we wish we could be more inventive and creative in that area, but we're we're restricted significantly.
Thank you.
Next item on discussion are proposed calendar dates for regular meetings for the 2012-2013 school year. We kept the dates second and fourth Monday just as we are this year. Hopefully that meets with board members approval, and it's a structure that's working for us. We've had to make some adjustments in the way we file our financials and that sort of thing, but what this calendar affords us that first and third does not is fewer Tuesday night meetings because they fall on holidays. So we think the second and fourth has worked well this year and would recommend we continue on that.
What is the reorganization?
Well, that's one of the things, as I mentioned to you in the executive summary.
Mm-hmm.
We will have to schedule a special meeting that will be just reorganization because the election is April 9th. April 22nd will be too soon for the canvas of the votes, and May 13th will be too late for us. So somewhere between probably April 22nd and May 13th, we'll schedule a one-item agenda, which will be to bring new board members on and do the reorg. Any questions? Pardon me?
Looking forward to some good speeches.
Okay.
That's good.
Next item is the food service equipment bid results. As you know, we've been talking about the elementary schools and their need for certain equipment in order to run the hot lunch program. We had a bid for that, for the equipment, which includes hot tables and what else?
Big cabinet, mobile cameras, serving counters.
To get all of that in.
Appreciate your paper now.
Yeah, I do. $19,342 for the various things that have to go into each of the schools in order to deliver the hot lunch as appropriate. Any discussion on that?
Pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward.
Is this one that we just moved to the consent agenda?
We talked about this at finance. I'm trying to remember if there was any questions that came up.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there were.
Pretty straightforward.
It is pretty straightforward. And, you know, just noting that the additional costs have to do with the point of service system, which you approved this earlier this evening.
Mm-hmm. we were just talking about the equipment that was already there. Mm-hmm.
Well, we talked about whether or not we could use any of the existing equipment, and that's not, you know, in most cases that's not appropriate. Like, we couldn't use a stove or something like that. It has to be commercial, prepared specifically for that and to keep the food at a certain temperature.
We were able to knock it down from our initial assessment.
Phyllis
would. We worked the serving line so that we used the existing hand sink.
Next item for discussion is the wireless network refresh, and this is really the final proposal that Mike will be bringing forward to the bow on the package, and that is to get all of our rooms upgraded in terms of the wireless capacity so that the new technology that's going to be in each of those rooms will have access to the wireless, and which has to do with speed, connectivity, and access for our students on a daily basis.
That is exciting. I know I asked this before and I didn't make a note to myself, but I put my question in. Once this, you talked about positioning the district for future needs and growth. What was your estimate again on how far this refresh will take us?
A hardware should last at least 8 years within the district. And it's the newest standard of wireless, so I wouldn't see that being obsolete within the next 5 to 7 years. Okay. I would anticipate all this equipment to be used for at least the next 8 years.
Okay. Thank you.
And like our other requests for technology, we would ask for this to be done on a lease basis with installation costs coming out of your budget, not on a lease basis.
Can this be moved to the consent agenda?
It's just a lot of money.
We'll move it. We'll keep it on. It should be pretty perfunctory in terms of
get a quick vote.
That's it for discussion.
Thank you very much, Ann. Upcoming meetings, May 29th, 2012, a regular meeting, 7:30 p.m. here at the Central Services Office. June 11th, 2012, regular meeting at 7:30 p.m. again at the Central Services Office. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board?
I had talked to Erica about this a little earlier, and Ann, I just wanted to, I've gotten a lot of emails today and some phone calls about the 8th grade trip, which happens to be on Friday. It's been, it's planned almost a year in advance, and I've just gotten some emails and calls today about safety issues, parents concerned about safety issues. And I know Chris, Dr. Drianzoff sent out in one of his Dr. D's keys today about the safety precautions that the district has taken to ensure the kids' safety. My guess is those of you who don't have eighth grade, three of us have eighth graders, and so we're aware of the trip on Friday, but they go down to Navy Pier, they go on a boat, and I know that's true.
Don't read Dr. D's.
But they go downtown, they go on this boat trip, and a lot of parents are concerned about safety issues with the NATO summit starting Saturday. And there's a lot of things going on in the city. So, again, I know we don't ever take our kids' safety for granted, but I've gotten a lot of calls about it the last couple of days, and I just wanted to bring to the table to the board, because, again, my sense is not everybody's really necessarily aware of it, because you don't have kids who are going on this trip.
And what we did find out is that he's, Dr. Dranzoff has vetted through security, the transportation company. What's different this year than last year is that the students are getting dropped off right in Navy Pier. They get right on the boat. They have their lunch and travel down to the IMAX. They go in, they see the IMAX, they get back on the boat, and they travel back up. So there's no no walk around Navy Pier, no independent activity. So probably we'll be dealing with late bus arrival on a Friday night from Chicago. Sure we will. So that would be our perception, that the most difficult challenge of the trip would be perhaps getting out late with traffic. But traffic will most likely be coming in, so it might not be as bad as we think. But there are some routes
bad,
that are
bad coming out.
It's both, yeah. There are some routes that are closed, and the bus company is aware of those routes that have been closed and have rerouted their bus. Dr. Dranzoff has spoken with the Chicago Police Department, Secret Service, both of whom have indicated to him that they do not perceive this as a safety hazard for students. I think we'll have to continue to monitor it, you know, for the remainder of the week, mm-hmm. and see what level of change may occur between now and Friday. But at this point, we don't have any real basis other than conjecture and people's anxiety and anxiousness, mm-hmm. anxiousness, understandably so, over the possible demonstrations, which mm-hmm. could occur anywhere.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't think it's so...
I think the nurses are on Friday. I think that's the demonstration
that's
going to be the most.
It's
Friday.
Actually, they're not doing a walk.
They're moving to Grant Park.
Oh, they're moving to Grant Park. Just for a rally?
I guess.
I assume anyone can pull their kid out.
Absolutely.
Sure,
yeah.
If they want, there's no penalty or anything.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Tara, for bringing that up.
Thank you.
Anything else? All right, public participation. Anyone present who would like to address the board at this time? All right, thank you. The board has determined a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters: collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, the purchase or lease of real property for use for the use of the district, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired, and the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Fenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Yes. The board will be taking action on the human resources section of the consent agenda when we return. Thank you very much. All right, back in open session. May I have a motion to approve? Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the human resources section of the consent agenda?
Which includes.
Employment personnel report, employment recommendations, superintendent's compensation, resignations, and resignation and retirement.
Motion to
Mr. Smith, second to Mr. Ellis. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
You have to do a roll call.
Sorry, roll call, Tara, please. Thank you.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard? Yes. Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. May I have a motion to adjourn the May 14th, 2012 regular meeting?
Second.
Voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.